Well, thank you, guys. Thank you for being Jacob's Well today. It's great to see you. I'm Greg Meyer, lead pastor here at Jacob's Well, and it's... Thank you. I needed that. And it's just fantastic to be with you today. We got some great stuff to go over, and I want to just run over a few things. First of all, welcome Melissa Melnick. I know she's sitting somewhere around over there. Yeah, thank you. This idea, yeah, one more round of applause. She's going to eat more than that to get through the next 2 years, but... This idea that in 2 years of being with us, she's ready to be a pastor is a very frightening notion. But we'll try not to corrupt you too much. But if we can make you a misfit for the church, never mind. I won't go there. So that's good stuff. Just really, really quickly, Project Next is going on. A lot of you kind of know about that. Some of you don't know anything about it. That's okay. But one of the things that grew out of our whole self-study last year was to be looking at, is there space that we can use that, you know, other than here? And one thing led to another, and as you know, the building that we are officed in, El Milagro, which is a church on 38th and 17th, is vacant, and what is happening now is that that is being turned into a community center sponsored by the ELCA, which we are a part of, and they want a functioning congregation to be the anchor tenant for that. It'll be its own, have its own nonprofit property management kind of corporation that runs it, and they want us to be that anchor congregation. So that would mean we would have permanent space. It wouldn't be ours. It would be the El Milagro Community Center or something like that, and Jacob's Well would meet there. So that's pretty exciting. Kind of, it's almost kind of like getting a building and not having to pay for it and not having to take care of it. I want to do that with my house, as long as I can sell it at the end. But... this is obviously very good news and something we really want to look at, but there are questions, like, is it really all feasible? Will the sanctuary, we're going to have to kind of, we'll gut it and redo it and everything to make it feel more Jacob's Well, make it feel very Jacob's Well, but at the same time, will that work? I mean, we got some real serious questions, but we really need to work those out through the summer. So please keep tuned in, and if we ask you to help us with something, to be doing some thinking, some studying, please say yes, or tell us how you could help and what way that fits or when it'll work and things like that, because we really need to get some things pulling together on that. So that's just a quickie on that. Right after service, if I am not here to talk to you after the service, it's because I'm in my car with some of our graduating seniors heading to the Apostle Islands as fast as I possibly can, because I'm intending to spend the night sleeping offshore of Sand Island, anchored in a 37-foot yacht that a friend of mine is letting me sail our high school seniors. So we have a graduating high school senior kind of thank you, launch you off into the world trip that leaves today. We'll come back Wednesday night, so keep those kids in your prayers, especially since I'm their skipper. No, I've sailed this boat for over 20 years. It's a fantastic boat, and so it's a great ministry, a great experience for these kids, and we're going to have a wonderful time. Some of the kids that can't go, we're going to grandfather them. They can go next year, and we'll work that all out. And also, we want to do some adult trips. We have done some in the past, and so if you're interested, say, hey, I would like to do that. You know, how come only the kids get to do it? Next Sunday, we're at Minnehaha Falls. Don't come here. Go to the falls. But after the service, I'm going to be going around and talking to folks and saying, I'm particularly looking for a date in September, maybe a three-day weekend, go up Thursday night, sleep on board, sail Friday, Saturday, Sunday, come back Sunday night. So be thinking about that and be looking for us. If you can't be at the falls next week, just get in on the conversation through Facebook, email, all that kind of stuff. That's enough about all that stuff. But as Justin said, we do have a little video. We created a little commercial that we want you all to see. So you want to roll that.
Hey, Jacob's Well. It's Melissa Lack here. I'm the community engagement person around here, and I am excited to tell you about a great idea that we've come up with. We are going to have our own picture directory. It is going to be awesome. We'll be able to see each other and get to know each other so much more easily and connect and feel like we're in the loop all the time with this picture directory. And I got to tell you, we have lined up a fantastic photographer. So on June 31st, I want you to mark your calendar, Jean-Claude Moonschnoods is coming. He is the best church photographer around, and we, just for $100, you can get your portrait taken, you can even order prints, so make sure to mark 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on June 31st, that's when we're going to do these pictures, and we are going to have our pictures in a book! Our faces all in a book!
Melissa!
Isn't that great?
Melissa!
What?
Facebook, Melissa. Facebook.
Facebook? Facebook.
So if you've got a smartphone, pull it out right now and go to Jacob's Well, Minneapolis. And if you haven't liked us, like us, because there's a lot of conversation that's going on there. And it's a great way to, you know, for you to put up questions and what stuff that's going on with your life or things that you're involved in and you want other people to, or just to know what's going on here. So do that. And then watch your newsfeed. As Jacob's Well, things come on, you know, like them. And that way you'll get more news. So, you know, we want you to know what's going on. And if it's actually something that's actually cool and something neat, then you can share it. And then your friends are going to see what's going on in Jacob's Well. And why do we want you to do that? It's not because we want lots of friends or once, but we think God really matters. And we think the way that Jacob's Well is talking about God and getting people introduced to what the church is about and what following God is all about is really different and really important. And a lot more people like us need to be a part of that. And that is just a great way for you to let other people know about it so that hopefully one day they're going to fill in one of these empty chairs. So go ahead and be a part of that. But I want to jump now back into what I actually came up here to talk about, and that is a series that we have going on called The Speed of Life. So The Speed of Life, what's that all about? I want to dive into this right now. And first of all, I just got to keep making that point that the speed of life is not slow, and it is not necessarily fast. It's not the point of it. The speed of life is the speed that you need to be about the things that are most important in your life. And that takes place in a lot of parts in our lives. And I believe that it's when you do that, when you start giving your whole heart and soul and mind to those things that are most important, then you finally, you don't have to say no. You don't have to say goodbye to those things that were so hard to let go of, because the stuff that is important, the stuff that you are engaging, has like occupied you and filled your life so full that the rest of the stuff just kind of starts sloughing off. And I think that's how God wants to do this. God isn't trying to make us say no to lots of things. God is just trying to preoccupy us with the best. And so that's what we're talking about. You know, one of the things that we know about the speed of life is this. When you're at the speed of life, you can be exhausted sometimes, but you still fall asleep with a clear conscience. And when you're running at the speed of life or living at the speed of life, you don't wish you could have done more. You don't wish you could have done it better. All you can do is you just can't wait for tomorrow morning when you get to do it again. And you may have stopped to smell the roses when you were running at the speed of life, or you may have run right by them and had to say later, but that's okay because you left life in your wake while you were running. Not hurt, not just busyness, not just stuff. Life. And that makes it okay. Now, there's going to be some people that are going to run around handing out rubber bands to you, all right? So they're going to just pass them. I think they're going to pass them, and they'll just go down the aisles and just take a rubber band, and I'm just going to put mine around my wrist here so I don't lose it. And if they're extras, just throw them in the offering baskets at the end or something like that, okay? So just play along with me and take your rubber band, and we'll go from there. So one thing about the speed of life that is so important and is so countercultural is that when you run, or I really should say when you live at the speed of life, you always win. When you're living at the speed of life, you always win, no matter what place you finish in. In fact, if you take your Sunday paper and you look on the back, you're going to find an outline there. I invite you to follow along with that if you'd like to. You can fill in the blanks. If you don't want to do it, no problem. It's just there for you as a way to kind of keep up with what we're doing. But the first fill in there, it says this: the speed of life isn't a race you win. The speed of life is not about winning. It isn't a race you win. It's a race you live. It's a race you live. In fact, you know what I would do is that second time when it says race, the race you live, I would cross out the word race there and write life. The speed of life is not a race you win. It's a life you live. And that's what we're called to be about. And that's what we're talking about today. And that's what I want to explore about with us particularly today. So we've talked about the speed of life from a bunch of different perspectives, and we're going to be talking about it again next week as well. And this week, this idea of don't get ahead is really all about relationships. It's about this piece of our lives that God wants to put together. And this is important. This is really important because this is Jesus stuff that we're talking about today, this don't get ahead message. It's God stuff. In fact, I would say that the speed of life, when we're talking about not getting ahead, is what I would call the pace of the kingdom of God. What does that mean? It means that when we run, aka live, at the speed of life, it feels like God is really, really close. God gets palpable when our lives are at the speed of life. And that means when God gets that close, it sometimes is kind of scary, and it gets very real to us. You know, and one of the things that I think we also know is that when you find that you're starting to run at the speed of life rather than the speed of light, you find that you don't go to church because you're supposed to, or you don't go to church to find God. You come to church, you come in our church because of God. You have had enough experiences that you want to come and be the presence of other people who have also been experiencing this God that felt really, really close all week. And you want to be about that with other people and figuring out where that's taking you next. So talking about winning no matter what place you finish in, let me start by telling you a story, okay? This is a true story that I made up last week. And it's about a guy named Andy and his, let's say, significant other. Don't you like that phrase, significant other? I mean, have you heard anyone introduced as their insignificant other? Or your notable but not quite significant other? I'm getting off track. So Andy and his significant other, anybody want to help me with a name?
April.
Josh? I like Josh. That puts a good spin on this. Okay. Andy and his friend Josh or April, you can decide. So they both like to run, and they decided they're going to run a marathon together, all right? So they've been training and stuff, and they're getting really psyched. They're working up towards this marathon, and while they never really, you know, they didn't do the little, you know, cut your wrist and do the little blood oath thing together, it was kind of the assumption that they're going to run this together, and they're going to finish together. Andy is a good runner. I mean, he's really strong. April, Josh, is also pretty good and actually kind of surprised Andy at how strong she is. And so, you know, this is kind of going well, but it gets to the day of the race, okay? And they take off, and April Josh just isn't feeling so great that morning. And in fact, you know, isn't too far in, and way before schedule, that significant other needs to kind of, you know, walk for a little bit and got to about mile 6, and things were getting worse, not better. At mile 10, it was quite clear that April/Josh might not even be able to finish the race. And so Andy, you know, is kind of, you know, having all this go through his mind, and you know, says, you know, I don't want to, you know, run this race without you. But April Josh immediately says, you know, maybe you should just go ahead. Maybe you should just leave me, and you know, you go finish this race. Stupidly, he says, do you really mean that? And of course, she says, yeah, it's okay. And he says, you know, I really don't think I can run and leave you behind. And she cuts him and says, no, really, it's okay. And he believes her. Him. And takes off and runs a race. Finishes that off. Well, he finishes his race in pretty darn good time, especially considering the fact that the first 10 miles are slower than were expected. And he's feeling pretty good that day. He was really actually very proud of his time, considering all that and so on. So he and April, Josh, also finishes the race. And he's waiting at the finish line for her as she comes across, you know, just kind of miserable as can be. And he's, you know, trying to be really sympathetic, but he's also, like, really psyched at how well he did and kind of help contain all that sort of stuff. And so she doesn't really have a whole lot to say to him. And they get in the car to go home. It was a 3-hour drive and probably the longest stretch of silent time in the history of their relationship. Okay, you probably know of some situations kind of like that. What I'd like you to do is someone, you know, that you came with, I'd want you to talk about what happened there in that story. What did Andy and or Josh, April, do and why? And what was going on there? So, you know, turn to someone you know, but also, I think it's important. We have some people that came by themselves, and they don't have anyone to turn to. So, you know, kind of look around and assess. Who, before we start talking, who needs to be included in my little conversation? And just take a minute and digest that scenario for me, okay? 1, 2, 3, go. Okay, thank you. You probably figured out a few things. Any real notable comments you guys want to throw out? Say again. April is a liar. Yeah. April, Josh, probably should not have said it's okay, because do you think it was okay? Probably not. I wasn't there. What else? Unfulfilled expectations. Maybe unspoken expectations, yeah. Any other stuff? Selfishness. On whose part? Andy's part, yeah. Just could not, and probably very positively motivated, but he just couldn't resist that. Someone else?
Not fair.
Not fair. Miscommunication. Say what you mean, mean what you say. Boy, this would be a different world if that happened.
Passive-aggressive.
Meanie. Okay. All right, well, I think we get the gist. I mean, I try to make the story sound a certain way anyway. But so this is not, what I want to talk about today isn't trying to give you a lesson on how not to be a doofus in your, relationships. Hopefully, that might be an outcome for some of us. That story is way too personal for me, probably. But as I said before, this is real God stuff. I mean, this is how God wants to look at the world. See, Andy didn't just miss his cue. He missed what life is really about. I mean, that's why this story is important. And that's why where it goes is really important. I want you to hear a short passage from the Bible. This is part of the story from the very early church. When I say the very early church, I mean seriously early. This is from the first weeks or months when the church, if you want to call it that, began, right? So Jesus was, he died, the resurrection, and he left everybody. There's Pentecost, the Spirit, was poured out on people, and they're gathering together just trying to figure out what this community is like. And here in chapter 2 of Acts, it says, and it's on your Sunday paper, it's on the screen, all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. We're together. We're in this together. And if you have a need and I can fulfill it, that's what I'm all about. Day by day, as they spent much time in the temple, they broke bread at home and they ate food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. They spent time together. They broke bread together. And other people outside their community seeing this, they thought, wow, whatever those people got, I want some of it. This is good stuff going on here. Now, there's some real radical stuff going on here. And I don't think that the Bible is saying we're all supposed to live this way. You're supposed to all go sell your houses and bring the money. If you do, just, small, non-sequential serial numbers, small denominations to me, please. But no, God's not asking us to do that. The Bible isn't recommending. In fact, this lifestyle didn't even last, through the early church. But these people were so excited, and they understood community in such a radical way that this is how they behaved. And I think even though we aren't expected to live out that same kind of utopian situation that they had in those first months, maybe even a couple of years, what made it work, what made it so wonderful, is still true today. And that is, there's this radical withness that they had with each other. This idea of being together, and that was Jesus' vision. In fact, as you look on the Sunday paper there, the message of Jesus has a radical with to it. It's something about Jesus that, that preposition with is just so important, and it needs to dominate how we see the world and how we look at each other, and it has to always be there as a red flag when we're thinking about our relationships. Jesus was with us. He lived and he died in order to be with us, and he tried to show us how to be with each other in ways, and this is important, folks, not in ways that are just really fun and nice. Sometimes they are, but they're often inconvenient. They bother us. They push us out of our comfort zones. They require discipline to do it. And they ring that old bell that we don't like to hear that reminds us, it's not about you. But you know what's neat? It says it's not just about God. And it's not just about the other person. It's about us. It's this radical with God, with us, with each other, with the world, together, with. That is the speed of life. I love the way John, so you have these four gospel writers that tell the story of Jesus' life, and John is the last one in the sequence of the Bible, and he has a very different take on the whole thing. He's very theological, philosophical, you know, talks in pictures about everything, and he refers to Jesus as the Word, the Logos, the idea, the concept of God being, you know, becoming human. And this is the Message translation. It says, "The Word became flesh and blood. It got real, and it moved into the neighborhood." The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. God became with us in Jesus. God got local. Now, it's just fine to get ahead on lots of kinds of things. It's good to get ahead on your mortgage. It's good to get ahead of that car that you're trying to pass in a two-lane road, you know? It's good to get ahead of the learning curve on the stuff that you need to know for your job or for school, or to become, you know, capable in the things that you need to be able to do in your jobs. Those are all good sorts of things. But as far as living at the speed of life is concerned, you don't want to get ahead, because it breaks down the withness that God calls us to and that life is really all about. So I want to talk to you about what it means to not get ahead from two perspectives. And the first has to do with your circle, the circles of your relationships. You see, we're all in relationships, and they have circles around us, and that are the boundaries of the people that are in that relationship with us. The more important the relationships, the more primary those relationships are to who you are and to your well-being and to your livelihood and so on, the stronger the boundaries of that are, and the more we share and we keep together in there. So, you know, your household, maybe it's your family of origin. If you don't live with them anymore, you're probably reestablishing that, and you're trying to kind of figure out how the one circle is beginning to replace the other. If you have a household, that you have your own kids and adults and stuff in your household, that's probably your dominant circle. And knowing this circle and recognizing this circle and what belongs here, what needs to keep coming back to the circle, is really, really important for us. And the more important that circle is, the more you have to be attentive to when something happens to me, when I leave that circle. I leave the circle of my family at home, and I go to work, and I have this experience at work, and it shapes me, and it does something to me, and I'm a little different person because of it. If that circle is really important, I need to bring what happened to me there back to the circle somehow. You know, same thing. If I have an experience with some friends, and this shapes me, I need to bring that back there. So you're going to see on your Sunday papers or the slide about it, I'll make a continuum of our circles, these circles of relationships we have. On the one end, you have the transactional relationship circles. And on the other hand, you have the independent ones. All right, these are the extremes. The transactional relationships, this transactional circle, are ones that don't need very much brought back to them. You know, the quintessential example of that is the person that you pay at holiday after you filled your car with gas, right? He, she wants your money, probably nothing else other than the coupon, you know? She does not want to know about the fact that you think you might be getting another client and might even be traveling to Seattle in the next couple of weeks in order to talk to them, you know? She look at you like, this is inappropriate, would you please move and let the next person come on, you know? She doesn't want to know that. She wants your money. Now, the interdependent ones need a lot more. I don't want to just know that my daughter is on a soccer team and maybe had a soccer game. When she comes home, I want to hear, how did it go? You know, how was the relationship with the other players? And some plays that you did that you really felt good about and that were exciting to you. And I want to feel that. I want to hear that. I want to know, you know, what's happening in your life because of that. That's these interdependent relationships. In between, in the middle there, it's in between, you know? With your boss at work, it is appropriate for you to let your boss know that your wife is pregnant and that maybe you're going to have to watch your hours a little more carefully to get home on time. And in fact, in about 5 months, you might be thinking about some family leave. That's appropriate. After the baby is born and you had to get up during the night four times to change the diapers, your boss does not need to know all of that, nor what all those diapers looked like when you changed them, you know? Not even God wants to know that. I mean, God sort of says, I was there when you did it. That was enough. You don't need to make me go through it all again, all right? I'll be there next time, too. That's enough. You know, so there's this, kind of appropriateness to what we share and what we bring back to those circles. Kind of a rule of thumb, and this is on your outline, bring back what happens outside the circle and is important to that circle. Bring that back to the circle or begin to vanish from the circle, all right? So bring what happens outside the circle and is important to the circle back to the circle or you begin to vanish from the circle. What does that mean? If this circle is really important, and this is what's really important to, like, if this is my family, and they really need to know who Dad is, who Greg is, and if something really significant happens to me and my life starts taking a different direction and so on, but the people here never learn about that, never find out about that, suddenly they look at me thinking they know who I am, but I'm not that person anymore. I start to become a facade. I start disappearing from this circle. It happens on the other side too. You know, you bring what's important to that circle. When I check out at Holiday, the important thing is the money. And if I don't bring that money back to that circle, I start vanishing from that circle because they don't want me as a customer anymore, you know? But it works all the way through, and that's what's an important thing to do. It's interesting. There's another story, shortly after the one that I just read you from the book of Acts about those early days of the church forming. And it's really kind of a fascinating story. It's one I don't normally even like to think about too much. But it's a story about Ananias and Sapphira. So they were part of this early community that shared everything, all right? And what happens? They're the first ones who broke the rules. They went and sold some property, and rather than bringing all the money back to the community, they said, well, we really only sold it for this much, and they brought part of the money back, and they died because of it. All right? Isn't that a great story? I don't know. You know, I always have trouble looking at these stories and saying history, truth, fact. I think that's a wrong, you know, way to approach it. You're just asking wrong questions, just asking for trouble when you try to say, did that actually happen and all that sort of stuff. What's important is that what is it saying? It is giving us this big message that these people, this community, had some radical withness going on. And these people started not participating in that withness. And they started disappearing from the circle. It didn't work anymore. A rather abrupt example of way of telling the story, but I think that's what was going on. So the truth is bringing growth, which is what we're really talking about, bringing your growth back to your circle is hard, and it takes time. When you're new in a relationship, it's usually like not even an effort. It just happens. But when time, you know, and these relationships get a little bit older and it seems like such a job to bring all this stuff back and you just don't have time with it and we don't do it. But it is hard and it takes time, but we've got to do it. Now, there are ways of sharing this stuff, and only one of them is, you know, sitting down for 3 hours after you come home from work and, you know, relaying everything that happened during the day. That probably isn't going to work for most people. But the one thing is you want to share the learnings, not necessarily the details. That's what people need for me to bring back to my circle. Where did I grow? What were my learnings? What changed about me? How can I communicate to other people? The details, they might be important, they might not be important. If getting all the details across keeps you from really communicating the learnings, then, you know, it's pretty clear what needs to go. I like to think about the emotional content of those experiences. That's what I want to bring back, the emotional content, the wows and the woes, you know, the highs and the lows of what happened during my day. Often you can kind of keep ahead of that curve by investing in the growing edge experiences that you've had with these people. That's something to do. But how you do it is not so important. What is important, in fact, what's non-negotiable, is that we realize that this is how life works. And as we change, we need to bring that back to these circles. We need to stay with each other. The second piece about this that I want to talk about, don't get ahead, is that you don't want to get ahead because getting ahead is actually getting behind. Getting ahead is actually getting behind. It isn't faster to be ahead in relationships. Remember, this isn't a race you win, it's a life you live. And at the speed of life, with is always faster than without. Right? At the speed of life, with other people is always faster than without. Why? Because you're going to have to do catch up later, and it's going to be harder, and there's going to be damage control to do it. In God's economy, it is better to be one together than separately making our way. I've got some other stuff here, kind of run out of time, so I'm just going to blow over it, but I want to give you a great example of how this works. I used to live in the South Pacific and Papua New Guinea, actually, and we would go through Hong Kong to come home most of the time. We got some other Hong Kong folks here. And you want to put up a map? So before we flew from Hong Kong, Minneapolis, I was looking at the map to see all the cool places we were going to fly over. It was a direct flight, Hong Kong, MSP, and it'll be coming up here a little bit. I think I jumped in making Joe work a little extra hard. It was really cool. So I was looking, we're going to fly straight out in the Pacific Ocean from Hong Kong, kind of just going north of Hawaii, you can see down there, and then coming in kind of like Northern California, across the Rockies. And I thought this is really going to be kind of cool. So I'm looking, where there are clouds and stuff, so you can't really see anything and so on. But then all of a sudden, the pilot comes on after about, 10 hours into this flight and says, if you look out your window, you can see the lights of Alaska. I said, Alaska? What? That's thousands of miles from here. Why would we be flying over Alaska? Well, this is why. It's because the world isn't like that. That's how we look at the world. That's how we think of the world. That's how I typically think of the world. The world is actually like this. It's not two-dimensional. It's three-dimensional. And the shortest route is not, if you go, that's the obvious most direct route, but the actual most direct route is like this. If you map it on a ball and you measure it, you're going to find that is a shorter distance because it isn't two-dimensional. It's three-dimensional. It's a sphere. That is actually a shorter line on a globe than the other one. That's why we flew by Alaska. Now, what does that have to do with what I'm talking about today? We have a tendency to look at our relationships. We look at our world around us and the circles around us very two-dimensionally. We don't see it very deep. We just see the surface level, and we think, oh, this is expedient. I think I'm going to take off and finish this race by myself. That seems like a better idea. It is to maybe win the race. It's a lousy one if the relationship was important. It had nothing, had all to do with the speed of light, nothing to do with the speed of life. God is trying to show us a world of radical witness where our relationships with each other and with the world and with God are very three-dimensional. And sometimes the best route, the best way to get through that is rather counterintuitive. It isn't what we expected, but it is the way it works. The line there on the outline is the shortest distance between two points in life is the one that passes through the right people. The shortest distance between two points in life is the one that passes through the right people and does not bypass them. It may look like it's out of the way. It may feel like it's a lot of extra work. It may just seem like, didn't I do this before? But if you skip it, it was not the speed of life. It is something you're going to pay for later. So you aren't really ahead when you're on your own. When we're talking about relationships, and we need to realize that. So the last thing there is, getting out front isn't getting ahead. It means you're on your own. And here's the deal with being on your own. When you're on your own, whatever you get is yours. But that includes not just the prize, it also includes the problems. And do you want all the problems on your own? When you are on your own, the reason that you don't share what you get with other people isn't because they don't want it, but it's because you are isolated. And when you're isolated, you're also lonely and you're vulnerable. God doesn't want us to live that way. God put us together and wired us to be together. And even when it's hard work, even when it seems like a lot of extra effort, God wants us to look at each other with that radical witness. In such a way that Jesus, who was God's with for us, said, I want to gather you around my table. What a better place for families to do that exchange than at the table with mealtimes when you can talk about what happened during your day and keep bring the stuff from your other circles back to that family circle. God says, I want to do that too. And the reason I ask you to be all in on this relationship with me is because I'm all in on it with you. In fact, I'm so all in on it that I'll give everything I have for you. And I want you to know that every time you come to my table over and over, every experience in the world, God says, I've got my arms around it, and I bring it to you here, and I want you to share with it again. And so God says, I want you to be with me in some pretty amazing ways. He says, I want you to eat this bread and know that I am with you. I want you to drink this wine and know that I am with you. And I want you to know it isn't just me and you. But it's all of us. When you come here and share this, you are not just experiencing God being with you, but you're experiencing these other people being with you. And we're kind of promising, like Andy maybe didn't quite do with Josh slash April, thank you. To be with each other. We need each other. We need to find out who else needs to be at this table with us so that God can be with us together. I invite you to come and to experience God being with you. There's five tables. Just go to whatever one is convenient to you. And there's wine, and there is grape juice. There's a smaller craft with a light color. Various breads. If you need hypoallergenic bread, that's up here, only at this table. And serve one another. Serve yourself. Share some words. Maybe the appropriate thing to say is, God and I are with you. Maybe that's the message as we share communion today. So come and join us in this gift. God is with us. Amen.